Hello, listeners. This is episode 121 of the Tech Podcast in 30. We have a very special guest, Drew Curtis, the founder of Fark.com. He is on to announce that Fark.com will be moving to Google's comments starting in 2014. Right, Drew?
Yeah, and then right after we sell to Rupert Murdoch.
Okay, all right. So it's going to be a Fox News property. And, of course, with me, as always, is Haim Cohen of HaimTime.com.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
And Paul N. Shapiro, PaulNShapiro.com.
Howdy.
And my job is very easy for this episode because Drew is an expert in the news and at countdowns. So please take us through the. I guess this is like the Fark.com version of Google Zeitgeist. What do you guys call it?
Sort of, except it's like this is what's definitely not important.
I see.
Shit that counts as a Zeitgeist.
I see. Okay, so the least important but funniest news stories of the year or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So what we've got is we've got sort of a hybrid of the best taglines, and they're still being voted on, by the way. We haven't got it completely sorted out yet. So it's the intersection of those with the best articles, or at least the more interesting ones.
All right, fair enough. Now, is the voting transparent? Can someone cheat?
Yeah, actually, I think that's up right now. We're doing we do sort of a playoff series, so I'm pretty sure they ran December through February, either today or yesterday, and I think the next batch of the 3 months goes up tomorrow, probably.
There's no BCS. We don't have a BCS ranking system.
Exactly, yeah. And then we just pick two at random, and those guys play each other, and eventually Duke loses.
So, of course, Duke sucks, yes. So, all right. So is it possible that, like, some prostitute in Florida who was covered for, like, I don't know, just like stealing like 1,000 munchkins by shoving them into her private areas. Could she be voting for herself over and over again and skew the results?
It's entirely possible. Probably not over and over again. We've got a way to link the accounts, but usually this is probably an award people don't really want to win.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. I'm excited to get started.
Yeah. Well, we were talking initially. You guys want to do articles or do you want to do trends? I can do either. I got both.
Well, let's start with trends. Like, sure. You're the master of news. I read your book. It's like, you know all the news stories and the cycles and everything. Was there, like, a specific trend this year, other than, let's say, the NSA leak, that we should be, like, worried or something about?
Yeah, so, like, actually, the NSA is a good segue into sort of the general trend. The main thing is basically, wait a minute, hold on, I got a 10-year-old back here. Anyways. The main trend is, yeah, he'll run by every once in a while, probably. Don't worry about it. He's drunk. But at any rate, one of the major trends we've been seeing this year along the lines of the NSA is essentially people appear to be finally figuring out what technology is actually capable of and are kind of shocked by it. To give an example, so the NSA was a really interesting situation where essentially what was announced they were capable of doing was not really outside the realm of possibility, clearly, for the last 5 years. And which sort of begs the question, who was surprised by this exactly? I've been arguing for a while that, you know, regardless of how all that went down, we should actually start thinking about stuff we know actually can't be done and maybe start trying to legislate against that. So, for example, sometime in the next 5 years or so, somebody's going to come up with a doorknob that'll be able to sync with your genome in 2 seconds. Should we allow this? Me, personally, I don't care, but you have to consider the ramifications of how some of these things are going to go down, and I think this was the first year when people really started realizing, like, you know, wait a minute, like, you know, they're up in my video game, they're flying drones around, it's like, maybe we ought to start thinking a little farther ahead. So that was sort of an interesting year from that perspective.
So do you think if things go, like, V for Vendetta style in 20 or 30 years, that Edward Snowden will be the guy that's looked at as the martyr that could have saved us? Or he wouldn't be the martyr if he doesn't save us. But that his role was that important, like, kind of jolting people into seeing what the government's capable of.
Yeah, you know, I guess that's going to depend on I was going to say no until you mentioned that last bit. It really depends on what we do from here. You know, if people finally get proactive, then yes. That would probably be the first time that's ever happened. So, I don't know. But like I said, I mean, my challenge to other people has been, you know, consider technologies that don't currently exist, but will, you know, like the genome sequencing doorknob, or, you know, for example, even like, you know, here's an interesting one too. Like, so forget for a second what the NSA was doing with all the data. It's actually currently possible to do it without having all that data. They can actually run the big data searches and figure that stuff out just by projecting it out. They don't even need to own a copy of it. So maybe we should outlaw that. Maybe we shouldn't. Yeah, you know, again, like, these things are kind of interesting. To me, the argument should be not should they or should they not be doing it. We should be thinking ahead and maybe sort of heading this stuff off. And so the reason this dovetailed into a greater theme was because of Jeff Bezos' announcement that we're going to have his drone delivery system, which was, you know, immediately mocked by all the people who did the alternate satire of the owls and whatnot. But I actually did a radio interview a couple days ago where somebody was like, yeah, it's all just a PR stunt, which it was. But then they said, yeah, this tech won't exist for at least 10 more years. And actually, no, it has existed. In fact, I was there when Bezos saw it for the first time at TED a couple years ago when they had some guys demonstrate this. It's on TED.com. I imagine you probably put flying robots in and it'll come right up. But the upshot is that that's where he saw it the first time. Some guys at, I forget where it was, in Philadelphia, I think, actually came up with the initial technology. This has been around for a while, and they're just now starting to put it into play. And again, the issue is, you know, so now we've got, you know, a city in Colorado trying to, which actually this week legalized shooting drones, which it seems like a bad idea to me. I mean, maybe there should be a right to shoot a drone, but I'm not sure I would, because, I mean, whose drone is that?
It just makes me think of that scene in Short Circuit 2 where Johnny Five has had the axe taken to him. It's very sad, you know.
Drew, can you name all these headlines as a FARC article, as a FARC headline?
As far as, how do you mean?
Like, the next topic we talk about, can you introduce it as a FARC-type headline?
Oh, yeah, you know, the problem is that most
FARC can fire it on the fly.
Yeah.
Trends are more not really, like, I haven't seen an article written about the trend, if that makes any sense. So.
All I do is I read Twitter, and I obviously assume everything they say is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything on Twitter is true.
Once in a while, they're right.
That's a way to be a skeptical reader, Han. Thank you.
Well, actually, we're kind of at the point where now, if you see anything on Twitter, you might as well just disbelieve it until the actual, honest to God, you know, like somebody related to the person shows up and says, "Yeah, they're dead." Because I mean, at this point, anything you see roll by, it's just like, okay, we'll have to wait till this gets sussed out.
Last time you were good enough to be on, I grilled you heavy on why you didn't sell to, like, Condé Nast or something. So can I ask this year, trend-wise, how is FARC doing? Because to me, FARC is still, it's up there with Slash. Haim, what are you drinking? Look at Haim's, like,
I am drinking the official drink of the FARC themed podcast.
Okay, that was definitely not your first sip of that for the night.
I started.
But so to me, you were an internet pioneer, like FARC.com is. How are you guys doing numbers wise?
So what's interesting is this actually was a strangely good year. I mean, this is also coming off of one of the crappier years we've ever had, so it's hard to say that's a win. But the reason why things improved dramatically is really strange. Trying to not go too inside baseball on this, but essentially the advertising model is changing.
Go inside baseball. Paul Shapiro will explain this to us, as he is an SEO ninja.
There you go. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it without boring the hell out of everybody, but the upshot is that the advertising model is moving towards, they call it there used to be cost per click, where you only get paid if somebody clicked on anything, and then there was CPM, which is basically cost per 1,000 impressions. And now it's moving to a CPE model, which is cost per engagement. There's a long, long, convoluted description of what this thing actually is, but what it boils down to is they're trying to figure out that, you know, basically who's there and who's not, who's a live person and who isn't. They call it engaged traffic, but the upshot is it's just like it's real people interacting with stuff. That's all.
And the FARC, I'm sure, like, has as a percentage like a high number of real human beings. You can tell by how, I guess, either disgusting or clever the comments are. Kind of red style. But then your audience spends money on stuff. Like, Haim
buys. Yeah, well, so, like, our advertising basically has, like, simultaneously the worst and the best ever results. Not for the same ads, obviously, but basically, you know, for Smack the Monkey Win $10,000, it's been a legendary, terrible time back in 2005. But now that they're getting a little smarter about it, like, the BuzzFeed ads that we've been running, which are fairly innocuous, get a ridiculous, like, it's several thousand times higher click-through rate, and it's not an accident. I mean, people know they're an ad.
It's interesting. I was going to ask you explicitly about BuzzFeed as being a competitor of yours.
Yeah, well, they're not really. I mean, we're not really driving traffic away from each other, and the way websites work is that even if they were identical, which they're not, we could still coexist just by linking back and forth. In fact, we have a partnership together, so it's like, I don't really see them as a competitor.
I see you as, like, in the context of, like, silly news or something, you guys are, FARC is, like, I don't know, the Wall Street Journal, and BuzzFeed is like Parade magazine.
I can see at the top headline a BuzzFeed article. Fark links to BuzzFeed, and then on the BuzzFeed, click here to read the Fark article, and just go back and forth.
There you go. I like it. Well, actually, this brings me to my next media trend. Actually, so that was sort of the BuzzFeedification of news, I guess. And it isn't just them. There's Upworthy. There's Viral. What's it? I don't know. I mean, I don't read these guys because I'm actually trying to find real news. So I don't spend a lot of time digging around. But what's interesting is that, I mean, again, if you listen to what BuzzFeed says they're doing, it's a very long, convoluted business model. Here's what it boils down to is basically entertain people when nothing's going on and then report the news when there is. That's it. It's not too complicated. But the problem is that we've run into the same problem over at Facebook where they've realized that if you give people what they want all the time, it's cats.
I love cats. Exactly. I can look at cats all day.
We love them. It's great. But it's hard to claim that, like, well, first of all, I'm not sure why Facebook cares whether or not there's anything relevant in my news feed or not. You'd think they'd be fine with cats. I mean, I'm personally horrified, but, you know, whatever. I believe that most people don't care. It's fine.
You mean relevant to the world at large, like being a citizen of the planet Earth. Okay, that's why they care about that.
Well, let's ask Paul. Paul, what is, on your Facebook, what is the top, I don't know, news story? Is it cats? Is it bitch strips? Are babies with cats?
It's probably something on BuzzFeed or Upworthy.
Both of which I had to unfollow on my Facebook news feed because they just inundate me. Not even that I don't like it, but it's just it's too much.
Got guys trying to figure out like what actually goes through the media zeitgeist, and it turns out, I mean, again, it's like they're not cheating, they're not doing anything anybody, you know, that the algorithm doesn't want to do. Turns out that most people just like crap. That's all there is to it. However, here's the thing. It's like, so what Fark does that's dramatically different from BuzzFeed, in my opinion, is that BuzzFeed and the Upworthy guys, they're searching for, like, what's the quick hit? What's the thing that everybody's going to click on, you know? Like this penguin if you hate depression. Okay, fine. That'll work. What Fark actually is, which is completely different and not easy to replicate, which is why we've been around 15 years and there aren't that many others like us, if any, is that we're a context engine. We tell people why they should care about something else. So we're not trying to source the thing that goes through to everybody. Excuse me. We're trying to figure out what's going on in the world and how to get people interested in it.
I see. So you see yourself as, like, moving people toward important information.
Drew is a humanitarian.
We're telling you why you should care. So it doesn't matter what the subject matter is so much as the context.
Go ahead. I'm extol Drew's virtues.
I was going to say, he sounds like he's a real humanitarian. I mean, Nobel Peace Prize
not really.
Right here.
I'm a drunk.
Can I say that, Haim, can you vouch for me on this, that I did the phony sign language thing before the guy at the Mandela funeral? I did that at a Rutgers event. I don't want to, I can say which one if necessary.
I love that.
Sure, I will agree with that, because I absolutely do.
I did that as a fake sign language interpreter at an event at Rutgers University. I got a little Rutgers pin, so I looked like I belonged on the dais. I just wanted to state that I did that sometime in, like, 2007. Thank you.
That's fantastic, by the way.
Thank you very much. Anyway, that was me tooting my own heart. That's what makes me a humanitarian. So, Fark, it sounds like the number one trend is people realizing what the government is capable of, stuff that they've been capable of all the time, and maybe thinking about privacy. And then under that, of course, is selfies. And then what is the next trend in the news for 2013?
Yeah, so next year, the one thing that's going to hit us pretty quick is probably going to be, at least in the financial world, the absolute hysteria that's about to break loose over Bitcoin. I have a feeling that's going to occupy the zeitgeist for probably at least the first quarter. We'll see how it goes. The problem is that there's nothing really here that hasn't been there before, you know?
So you think that's going to blossom from I mean, there's lots of talk of it right now, but you think people are going to get more concerned at the beginnings of 2014?
Yeah, well, so the problem with the Bitcoin stuff is essentially, like, it's the same thing that there always was. You know, it's like, it's Beanie Babies, it's tulips in Amsterdam in 1636, you know, it's like, I mean, let me put it to you this way. There's a reason why it's a law that the U.S. government makes that we have to accept U.S. dollars as currency. You know why? Because we might not. You know what's going to happen to Bitcoin? Pretty much that.
Well, I have an aside story. So my students are playing the stock market game, and they're not allowed to buy Bitcoins, but I'm betting them that I can beat all of them in the stock market game. I just virtually bought $100,000 worth of Bitcoin saying that I will beat you.
You probably will, because, like, here's the thing. I'm not saying there isn't money to be made. There certainly will. it just ain't going to last. So, you know, play your own accord as far as that goes. But I'd say in the short term, that'll probably win.
Heim's putting out, he's using his Bitcoin to put out a hit on an enemy of his from high school and to buy narcotics.
That is not
that's a great idea. That's what
on the Silk Road. That's what he's using it for. It is. That's what it is.
Such a bandwagoner.
he's going to have a drone deliver narcotics to his house. That's what he's going to have.
That's what I need. I mean, we need... Just think of the college condom market. Drones are perfect for that.
Yes. How many pregnancies can drones prevent? Okay, and also on-demand vasectomies. All right, so Bitcoin is huge. It actually speaks to, I think, the budding revolutionary ideas that, like, someone like Snowden kind of stirs up in a certain segment of the population. Like, not necessarily, like, a militia, buy guns and like, hoard them in your basement mentality, but it both of these stories are, like, kind of needling big government, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you said earlier that we've never reacted until something really bad has happened. Maybe these are the pressure points that'll lead up to, at least pressure on elected officials to change how they work, or maybe even to do campaign finance reform as the lowest common denominator solution to these pressures.
You know what would be a big improvement is if, I would love to see an older white politician not use air quotes around the word internet, you know? Because it's like, I mean, that'd be like going color TV in 1980, you know, as if that's some kind of weird-ass magical technology of some kind. Like, I mean, the internet is so ubiquitous at this point that my kids hardly even recognize that it's a thing. I mean, and to have the policymakers be people that think it's some kind of weird-ass fad or some kind of, you know, strange thing that these other people do, it's like, that's really bad, honestly. I mean, I think that's where most of the problems are coming from.
See, that's why Anthony Weiner would have been a perfect politician, right? He knows the internet inside and out.
Yeah, and comic relief. Don't forget that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Next trend? Do we have a next trend?
This might be my blind spot. I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of intellectual property stuff coming up in the near future because the patent war stuff has been heating up, but this is sort of a space I live in, so it might be my bias. But there's another reason why it's going to be heating up as well. So it turns out that in the last 50 years or so, the U.S. government has kicked the date for copyright expiration and trademark expiration ahead like 10 or 11 times since it was created. Like about 50 years ago, it was 25 years after the creation. Now it's 95. The last time they kicked it ahead was 1997. And strangely, every time they kicked it ahead was right around the time Mickey Mouse was about to go into public domain. Well, we're staring down that gun barrel again. It's coming up in a few years, and I expect that Disney, if they haven't got up their ass already to get moving on this thing, is about to do so. And I think we'll see a lot more discussion about whether or not they should even be allowed to. I mean, you guys realize nothing's gone into the public domain in the last 20 years.
The special interest group for cell animation people is just incredibly strong in Washington. It's absolutely unbeatable. And what is WikiLeaks telling us about these like SOPA type negotiations that are going on? I think which nations are subject to them? I think the United
There's
States
a is European or a Pacific one or something. Yeah, I see those float by too, actually, because I'm tied in with a bunch of those guys as well. So far, nothing particularly has popped up yet, but it's always dangerous because you've got attorneys running these things and they're idiots.
So you think that it's that people are just going to become more up in arms about it, or that like it seems to me looking at the results. Okay, so Apple seems to be trouncing Samsung in court, but as far as software patents go, we had an anonymous lady walk by in the background. She was trying to stay out of frame.
Yeah, that's my wife.
but it seems that people are getting sick of a certain type of patent war, right? I mean, you think that software patents might see some leniency added into them before Mickey Mouse becomes public domain?
Drew, Justin doesn't know why he's saying this question, by the way.
Oh, that's fine. No, actually, it turns out that there's a pretty decent chance the Supreme Court's going to hear an argument as to whether or not... it isn't essentially that question, but it's pretty close to it. They may actually, depending on which way they rule, it could get rid of software patents completely. Unfortunately, they've had an opportunity to do this before, and they've gone the other way, so who the hell knows, man? I think they're all high.
Now, was your TED Talk software patent-based or actual patent-based?
No, it was more overall patent-based, but the genesis of it was I got sued on a software patent. But the main problem is that I'm not – I would not necessarily say that you could never have a patent on software, But I haven't seen one yet that I would say, sure, this is good, if that makes any sense.
I want to claim that I have the patent for talking about shows in 30 minutes or less.
Yeah, well, somebody does. I guarantee that exists, because, the podcasting one, you know, somebody's got a downloading episodic content over the internet patent, you know, it's like, all
right. Right, so we need to get in at, I want a patent on every, like, 29 minutes and no seconds, 29 minutes and 1 second, 29 minutes and 2 seconds, etc. I want all of those patented.
Well, yeah, we'll be episodic, we'll be periodic, and then it'll be okay.
So Haim has a, I have a Fitbit on too, but Haim has a Fitbit and Google Glass on, Drew, okay? Is where, I'm not just saying that to denigrate. Is wearable technology, there's so many kind of funny things that I could say if I wanted to make this pod, like about where other places you could wear technology, but anyway, I won't, also because Storm might be listening in his room. Is wearable technology a thing? How about this? The Internet of Things. Like, it's like, I think that things being the basis of cool technology rather than strange software is becoming interesting. Nest and Quickset locks that you can manage with Wi-Fi, stuff like that. Where's that going?
You know, I've been calling this, I got into a bar argument with somebody about this the other night, because my friend of mine was of the opinion that the robots are going to kill us all eventually, you know, maybe like real soon. And I was like, you know, I don't really see it going that way. I'm calling it augmented humanity. I think that's where it's all going. Like, I'll give you an example. So, like, right now, like, I don't remember anybody's phone number. I used to know everybody's phone number 20 years ago. I can't remember a single phone number. And I'm pretty sure 10 years from now, I won't know where anything is because I'll just GPS to it. Now, one way to look at this is a horrifying situation. Oh, my God, what are our kids going to lose? On the other hand, I can't personally build a table, and every single one of our grandparents could. And are probably horrified that we cannot build tables. So, and again, did we lose anything? I don't know. I mean, I've got a table right here, actually. I think I'm doing all right. So it's one of those things where you have to look at it from that perspective, is that are we going to necessarily lose the ability to do anything that we care about? And I would argue no.
Has Storm used a dictionary, a paper, bona fide paper dictionary?
I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
What does a dictionary have on?
Natan, my son, will never know a time where there was a paper dictionary.
Oh, why would you want him to?
So I can say you don't know how to spell that word. When I was your age, I had to look it up in this paper book.
You
can still
say that. You didn't. He's gonna need to do that when he's 15, and then you can't even say it because at 15 you weren't using a paper dictionary either.
That was probably true.
So how far back do you want to go? See, I don't think that when I think of the robots taking over, I think more. I'm not thinking of the Matrix as being the worst case scenario. I'm thinking more like Wall-E being the worst case scenario.
Actually, that's probably where it's going, I think.
Right? That if anywhere, and okay, I cannot help myself. I can't.
You're on a cruise though, man. They look kind of cool.
Okay. So I saw this thing. Someone. Like I was in my suggested videos on YouTube, and I watch a lot of strange. This is so off topic, but Drew, you bear with me. There's this woman who is the fattest woman of all time, apparently. Who accidentally or purposely, she was charged with murder, killing her nephew by like crushing him with her flab. Have you heard of this story?
You know, like I said, this sounds really familiar. Like I swear this has happened about a dozen times.
I pride myself on watching clips from bad television, and when I saw that she was on Nancy Grace, I felt like this. I'm an expert in morbidly obese people. I couldn't imagine how I missed that story. Sorry for the aside. I'm just thinking about it now.
But this is what Spark is about. All these stupid stories like this.
Well, that is the essence of it, right? If I had been on Fark more often, I wouldn't have missed it. That's the thing. Talk about Fark providing context. If Fark could fill in those gaps, so I know just flatly. Every story like that, I would be a happy person. I was very upset.
I'm sure it's a genre. I'm sure there's a Rule 34 out there for it. I'm not going to go look, though.
All right. Sorry. I literally couldn't help myself. All right. So we got software patents, Edward Snowden, Amazon delivery, wearable tech, something else. What's the trend number 5 or 6 or whatever we're on now?
I think that's pretty much it for the coming year, although the one in the future, one of my running bar conversations has been, since driverless cars are pretty much around at this point, like, I mean, they're not on the road, but, you know, they exist. I had a ride in one 3 years ago, so it seemed fine to me at the time, but given that that's coming, it's like I've been having a challenge with some friends of think of all the ramifications of that, because there's actually plenty. Like the easiest one is that there are certain areas of real estate that are currently useless for retail that suddenly become not useless for retail. Because now you don't need parking. A car would drop you off at the door, and then it goes and takes off for the lowest bidding parking lot. You know, stuff like that, basically. Or then that one of my friends, and I think it was my wife, pointed out that would you even need to own a car? I mean, maybe you would just call for one, and one of them would just be flowing by. Or
it's kind of like a train without a track or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or you just see them migrating across the country, you know, like CAS is coming up in Vegas, so everybody, all the cars leave Tahoe and drive down the road to go to Vegas to pick up fares, you know. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen as a result of that.
Could that lead to the total dismantling of public transportation?
Probably.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I think driverless cars is a huge thing. Also, the probably fewer accidents overall, I bet, per capita when it's fully rolled out, and increased productivity and happiness overall for the human race. Because commuting is, I don't know, the absolute worst thing in the world. I hate it. So, Haim Time, are we now ready to get into like the nitty gritty of the stories? Is that what you had planned?
In the last 5 minutes, we can start firing off the best stories that we think of.
Alrighty, so I'll give you a lead off here. This is one of my favorite ones here. The FARC headline was: "At least everyone will know where his balls used to be."
Okay. Now, Justin, can you tell me where that comes from?
I don't know. A guy who got shot in the balls and has like he has a big hole there in his pants. I don't know.
That's pretty close. It's a 23-year-old man in Lehigh Acres, Florida, was playing with an unloaded flare gun and dry-firing it to amuse himself. And at some point, according to authorities, he reloaded the gun but said he forgot that he had done that. The next time he went to dry-fire the gun at the ground, the flare shot out, bounced back, hit the man in his genital region. He was later treated for burns and stupidity.
Oh. Those are instead of blue balls, he has burned balls. Just terrible. Exactly.
So that's why they can tell where his balls used to be, because it would be lit up like broad daylight.
That's a good one. I like that one. And yeah. Of course, that's from Florida.
Exactly, yeah. Here's one from Australia, which is the Florida of the Pacific. Or maybe that's New Zealand, I forget. Anyway, boozy feral pig who found fame after getting drunk on stolen beer and starting a fight with a cow dies in a car accident. It was not known if Swino had been drinking prior to the accident. That was his name. A beloved local folk hero died in Australia this year. Swino was a feral pig who gained notoriety after he consumed 18 unguarded cans of beer, got in a subsequent fight with a cow, and then rampaged across several tents and trash cans at a campground. Sadly, he was found dead after losing a fight with a vehicle. Locals said they are saddened but also relieved because he was pretty mean when he was drunk.
Now, this is news, by the way. Yeah, it's reported in an actual newspaper.
I find it funny that the implication is that beer must be guarded at all times. The beer for the guard for the beer, he took a break.
It's fantastic. But I got on my to hear where these guys go here. I was looking over too some of the stories. I like this. There was cops again. It looks like it's this was Chicago, not Florida, surprisingly. A 17-year-old beer was or 17-year-old boy. Listen to me. was found injured earlier this year when basically he his female friend said he had shot himself. However, apparently he was embarrassed to say that he had done that. So instead, he told cops that he was shot by ninjas.
Brilliant.
The medical personnel were able to determine the shooting was self-inflicted, however, which makes it even more embarrassing because
medical personnel don't know what ninja are capable of. The ninja could have been responsible. Yeah,
ninjas don't use guns.
That's right. That's what you're right, Paul. That is what a smart doctor would have said. Hey, kid.
My all-time favorite story of the year, just for sheer humor factor, and I don't have the FARC headline on this, but it's good, was a guy who basically was plotting to murder another man, who I guess he knew because he accidentally butt-dialed the guy while talking to somebody else about how he was going to kill him.
Imagine living in such a way that you would hear that like call and not think it was a joke.
Yeah,
like, you know, because if I got that, I would assume it was a prank. But like, I guess if you really get made enemies
again, okay, you found the seriousness of the story.
He got a phone call and listened for an hour and a half as he listened to the man who was hiring the guy in a third person plotting the murder, giving direction to the victim's house. And at one point you heard the man saying, I don't care if you have to burn his house to the ground with him in it. I don't care what you have to do. Just make it look like an accident. Unfortunately, I guess he was recording at the time, so it's going to be really hard to make it look like an accident with that on tape.
Okay, Drew, last one, and then we got to end it.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, so the funny thing was I was going to finish up with the sign language guy just because I thought that was the best story we've had yet. I mean, that is absolutely fantastic. I like the all of the complaints that the deaf guys have been saying. Like, we're basically, you know, since they haven't proven that the guy actually was doing fake sign language, they have to give him the benefit of the doubt, so they've been trying to figure out what he might have been saying. Including, they were talking about the former premier South African president, F.W. de Klerk. However, when he was doing the sign languages, they were saying that it could have been, might have been saying running horse, friend, or beyond, but only if he was really terrible, which apparently he was.
Continue stalling. I will get the headline because I know where it is.
Yeah, see if you can figure where that is. What I like about it is like apparently, now this is the only interesting part of the article, they were trying to explain how this could happen. And it turns out that being a fake sign language guy in South Africa is actually a pretty common scam, apparently. Mostly because when people, basically, there's people who have deaf relatives who kind of understand sign at least, and so they know a few sort of generic signs. And basically what they do is it's like, you know, it's hard to find somebody who can actually do sign language. It's even harder to find somebody who can know if that person is lying to them. And so as a result, this is a pretty good target for con artists.
Imagine if this were translating from English to French or something.
Okay, I got it. Deaf people are saddened to learn that Nelson Mandela pickle hopped the Yam Bridge with digressive hat monkeys on Fester 12.
There you go.
Yes.
The problem is that you post it. Well, it's not a news flash, but you post it as something like that as a news flash, and you have no idea what that means. And then you have to click.
Can I get that as a FARC T-shirt? That's like, it's just like the whole front of my shirt will have writing all over it.
You have to explain it though, because it'll look like just somebody was high when they were typing it. Otherwise,
so okay, Drew, we got to end it, but we appreciate you coming on
for episode 121 and being a number two your second appearance on the show. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Drew Curtis of FARC.com. Some guy. Bye, Duke sucks. Bye.
Duke sucks.